Leading Ideas Talks podcast is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly e-newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas. Leading Ideas Talks podcast is also brought to you by the premier Doctor of Ministry in Church Leadership Excellence from Wesley Seminary and the Lewis Center. Learn more and register now for May 2022 at churchleadership.com/DMIN. What does it take to turn a congregation around? Ed Brandt, a long-serving pastor who recently retired as Chief of Chaplains for the U.S. National Guard, believe success in ministry is grounded in the hard but essential work of reaching out to the community, forging new connections, getting to know people, listening, earning trust, taking risks, and learning from mistakes.
Welcome to Leading Ideas Talks, a podcast featuring thought leaders and innovative practitioners. I am Douglas Poe, the director of the Lewis Center, and your host for this talk. Joining me is retired Brigadier General Ed Brandt. Retired Brigadier Brandt is the pastor of Laley Presbyterian Church and has had a storied service career. Our focus for this podcast is turning around congregations. Ed, can you share a little of your story so the audience can become acquainted with you? And I'm so happy that you're joining us today as you share a little bit about who you are and what you've done.
Well, Douglas, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I really appreciate the opportunity to share stories and maybe some insights that may or may not be helpful to people. First of all, it's not Brigadier General Brandt, it's Ed. That works really well. Just don't call me Mr. Ed like the horse on that old TV show that showed up, number one. Number two is I was raised in the Churches of God General Conference. It's a fairly conservative denomination, primarily located in eastern Pennsylvania. My parents were members of that church. They raised five kids in that church and became very involved in that church growing up. Eventually went to a church-affiliated college, went to a Presbyterian seminary, went back to the Churches of God, and it was like a round peg, square hole kind of experience. And in 1987, made the jump to the Presbyterian Church USA as a pastor, serving churches in Pennsylvania, Delaware, Southern California, Michigan, and along the way joined the National Guard, where I served in Baghdad, Iraq for about a year. So those experiences have been both large churches, small churches, rural churches, suburban churches, urban churches. And no matter where you go, you're caring for people. That's all that matters. You're caring for people.
Great. And you gave a little bit of sort of your church history. But you also served in the National Guard and just retired recently. Can you just share a little bit about your time serving in the Guard?
Absolutely. I'm almost embarrassed to say that if you look at my family history, you go back to the Civil War. Again, my family was raised Mennonite in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. And so one of my relatives refused to bear arms and spent time in prison for that during the Civil War. So they had that. But my uncle served in Vietnam. He served there for a year. And I'm very proud of that service that he has. I served my first church in the hills of Pennsylvania, up in Perry County, Pennsylvania. And at a senior citizens board meeting, the local insurance agent came to me and said, "Ed, have you thought about the National Guard?" I said, "Never thought about the National Guard." And he replied, "We always need chaplains." And so I made the application process. And eventually in 1989 was commissioned. Earl Brooks was the state chaplain, God rest his soul. Remember Earl Brooks saying to me, "Ed, don't worry. You'll never be deployed. Maybe a flood, maybe a prison riot, but don't worry. Nothing will ever happen." And boy, have times changed since 1989. And again, my whole idea was I did it 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year, and then took a church in Delaware where I made the switch to the Delaware National Guard. And then at that point, took a church in Southern California because I always wanted to live in Southern California. It was a great place. And then got deployed for a year to Baghdad, Iraq. Coming back from that deployment, I remained full-time in the Guard up until May of 2020. And I got to tell you, Douglas, all along the way, you have these incredible opportunities to meet people from various walks of life. And the joy is hearing their story And hearing stories from other people helps me adjust my understanding of life, because raised in a very conservative county, a very conservative denomination, to me, people hear the stories, hear their struggles. It really does open your eyes and opens your spirit to how people have experienced the world in other ways that I haven't. So it made me reflect upon my life and the benefits that I have had, and make me eternally grateful, but also provides an opportunity to give to others.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It really is a joy to get to speak with you, given your sort of rich history in various places and sort of living in sort of different worlds and bringing those worlds together.
That's a key phrase, if I can just say. That's a key phrase, bringing worlds together. I think what happens in today's society, we live in such separate worlds, separate tribes, if you will, and we don't even want to build a bridge of understanding. We want to say, this is my world and my world is right. And that's just not the way to live.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad you interrupted. I think that's helpful.
Sorry about that.
No, not at all. I want to begin our conversation and sort of ask you, you've pastored many congregations and you've seen other congregations, spoke with many pastors, and a common thread today runs through many of these. There's this uphill battle or climb towards vitality that congregations are struggling. Can you share why you think there's such an uphill sort of climb towards vitality?
My answer was going to anger some of your listeners. I think we have some lazy.
Okay, I like it. I like it.
Okay. We have some lazy clergy out there. That's the bottom line for me. They're lazy. And they're lazy. They're afraid of trying new things. They're afraid of failure. And sometimes I think there's a leadership piece that is missing. Now, that's not everybody. Please, that does not apply to everybody. But if you want to be innovative, you have to be creative. That creativity requires a little bit of leadership, taking some risk, willing to get your hands slapped a little bit. Let me tell you one story. A friend of mine was at a church, was interviewing for a new associate pastor, and they met with the associate pastor, the candidate. And the questions, normal questions were asked about what to do, this and that. And then they turned around, what questions do you have, as always asked? And the person said, well, we've been taught boundaries in seminary. Okay, boundaries, they're great. Boundaries are good. What boundaries are you speaking of? And the person replied, we were taught in seminary not to work more than 35 hours a week. And I'm thinking to myself, name me one profession, name me one, whether it be medical profession, legal profession, the clergy, where if you can succeed, and success has many different definitions, but how do you succeed or make an impact at 35 hours a week? Now, there's a danger. There's always a danger of working, you know, being a workaholic and in it for yourself, your own reputation, that kind of thing. But it takes a lot of effort. If you're trying to revitalize a congregation, it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. I look at it as like a new tech startup in many ways, trying to get something off the ground. And so for me, whether it be in the hills of Perry County or Wilmington, Delaware, or in the Pacific Palisades, California, or even here in Naples, Florida, I've always found it valuable to get involved in the local community, to make connections with people, to make yourself available. It reminds me, remember the movie with Robin Williams, Dead Poets Society?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And he's in front of his classroom. He says, open the first page. Now, rip that out. I think we need to rip some pages out of some of our theological, practical theological books that just don't connect with today's society. And it may be just practical theology, maybe just the way you run a church, the way you get involved in the community. But you have to think in new ways. We got the book knowledge, got that down. But the way you apply it, I'll tell you one quick story. So at the first church I served in Perry County, Pennsylvania, I went to visit with David Myers. He's the local funeral director, to introduce myself. And it's your typical thing. The funeral home is out back. The furniture store is out front. So it's one of those deals. And I just graduated from seminary. He said, okay, Ed, where'd you get your education? And I said, I went to Princeton Seminary. He goes, wrong. You're going to get it here. And that was probably the truest words he ever said. It's getting to know people, the practical application of things, learn from mistakes. It's like baptism by fire, but it was a great learning experience for me, having those challenges. I mean, those late night meetings where you're talking about the what color to paint the restrooms. Okay, those are the tattoos that will never be scraped off my body. They are there. You know, so it's that is a short answer to a very complex question.
Yeah. Thank you. I want to, you said a couple of things. I want to start back where you said you're going to anger some of the audience. So how would you respond if I'm one of those people in the audience that says, you know, I work hard at being creative. I'm working 65, 70 hours a week, but I have individuals who just don't want to do anything. It all falls on my shoulders. So how would you sort of respond to
find new individuals, find new people? I hate to say it that way. Find new people. You reach a point where, you know, it's like the wedding feast. Okay. We've invited all these people and they're not coming. So you know what? Let's go invite some other people who might want to enjoy this. And sometimes you'll be surprised at who will step up to the plate. It's like, so we have, for example, at Lately Presbyterian Church, we are now on the verge of going to two services because it's in season. People come from the north, down the south, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so we're looking at that, and we're just trying to figure out ways to incorporate people. And I've told people, you know, one new person, it's super. Two new people, it's great. Three new people, they're taking over. That's how it's looked at in the life of a church. And you have to prepare people, and it's mentoring people, it's engaging people, and it's not being afraid to really to work really hard and know that some of your efforts will fail. Gore-Tex, located in Delaware, some of the folks who worked there were members of the church I served. And when they do an annual evaluation, one of the questions they ask is, what did you fail at? If you didn't fail at anything, you didn't try hard enough to do something new. And I think we have to make some compromises along the way. And so I'll get invited to different veterans groups because of my background. And then maybe on a Saturday morning, which is, you know, I like to sleep in Saturday mornings, but I go. It may be a Friday night, but I go. And again, I'm at a different stage of life. My kids are grown. I don't have small kids like other folks might, and they need better priority. By no means sacrifice. Do not sacrifice your family on the altar of service, but you have to make some compromises along the way of what's important. You have to know in your own mind what the priorities are and be willing to say yes and be willing to say no to them. I can't determine them for you.
Yeah, thank you. That was helpful. Let me pick up another thread of this. So again, thinking of that person who would be talking with you and responding.
Sure.
And saying,
I'm sure I'm not. Okay. Dude, you're not going to post my email address, sorry. I don't want to get any.
Oh, no, not at all. We don't post the email address. Okay, they'll just email us and say, can you say to him? But I'm trying to ask the questions for them so that you can answer.
Sure.
I think then one of the questions the individual would ask would say, so what do I do? So how do I turn this thing around? What are some of these practical steps you're thinking of?
Sure.
And let me just tag in a little piece of that also that I think I know, but just to have you say it, you're not talking about someone trying to create a mega church.
No.
For you, vitality has nothing to do with size. It has to do with impact.
It has impact. And so I would say a couple things. Number one, how do you communicate with people? Do you communicate with people? Are you available to people? Are you an extrovert or an introvert? If you're an introvert, that's another challenge. It really is. I'm an extrovert, off the chart extrovert. So I think that plays in my favor. I can walk into a crowd of strangers and come out with like 15 business cards, make connections with people. That's just the way I'm wired, the way I was raised. So that's just me. But for example, when I first started here at Lately Church, as I did it late at Wilmington and other churches, I get the church directory out and I just start calling people A to Z. Hey, how you doing? I'm your new pastor. Want to touch base? Any concerns? Hooking me with them on Sunday. In most cases today, you get the voicemail. You leave a voicemail. Just because someone doesn't answer does not mean you do not leave a voicemail. Communicate. The constant contact is a great outreach of showing people that there's something happening here in the congregation. And I think the third thing is meeting with the elders to say, are you okay with what this plan is? So you have buy-in from the leadership. You want the leadership to be on your side, so to speak. they need to be aware of what you plan to do. You need to communicate with them about that plan, get the necessary approvals, necessary funding. So as you move forward, it's just like, oh, look, there he or she goes again, get no permission. That's not what you want to have happen. You can create and you can control in some ways the narrative. For example, this is an old story. So my grandmother, I was raised with my grandmother and great aunts because that's who was around the family. And if you called my grandmother and you told her X, Y, Z, she would get on the phone and call other people X, Y, Z. It's like a chain that would take place. And so the point is, as you talk with people, share what your vision and mission is for the life of the church that you're serving and talk to people who have nothing else to do but to talk to people. And they will tell people. It's like whisper down the lane. Now, hopefully don't get it wrong, but it's like whisper down the lane. And I try to go to every single event I can possibly squeeze into my schedule. When I get a business card from somebody, I put that into my contact list. I send them a note thanking them. Great to meet them. We started this thing called Minute for Mission. We didn't start it. It's what churches do. And it's not just the missions we support. So we've invited representatives of local businesses around our community to say, what do you do? What do you sell? Who are you? We've had a mixer, a wine and cheese mixer, on the first Thursday of each month to invite people from the neighborhood. It's these connections. It takes some work. It takes some knocking on doors. It takes some cold calls. But yeah, I find that invigorating. If I get stuck, I usually go out and see people. That's what I do.
I like it. I'm fascinated by the inviting people from the community for these sort of one-minute mission. So have you found that when they come and share that they're thankful because it really has helped them to, make a connection with individuals they probably would not have connected with if they had not been invited to the congregation?
Let's go back to what I started with. Everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. And in today's world, the way you tell your story is either on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. You don't know who's reading it. You don't know. But if you can tell your story, and there's always a little personal piece to it on Sunday morning that resonates or connects with the congregation. And then there's coffee hour afterwards and people engage that. That goes so far. It makes a connection because here are people who have heard what you're saying. For example, I joined the above Chamber of Commerce here in Naples, met a lot of people. So we had Brittany Brown was here on Sunday morning. She talked about Big Sisters, Big Brothers. Well received. We met her afterwards, got a picture. She got a picture. We sent her the clip that she can use for promo purposes. We take that clip, embed it in our Constant Contact, take that clip, put it on our Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. You know, it's communication. You know how many people look at it? We can always see, but it's just communicating what's being done. People appreciate the chance to tell their story.
Yeah, that's a great lesson and one hopefully people will take away, giving people the chance to tell their story.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stay maybe one more question in this vein.
Go for it.
Or respond.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I got my captain's mitt on. I'm out in the outfield.
I love it.
The Batman.
That's right. So as people, as you do this and you're doing all the things you just talked about, you always have people in a congregation that aren't going to be happy. I often use the example, if I gave everybody in the congregation $5, somebody's going to come up and say, you know, I deserve 10 because I do all these other things that the others don't do. So someone's always not happy. So when you've done these things and you're making changes, how do you deal with the pushback and the people who aren't happy with what's going on? So how do you to help them to, you know, move and journey with you?
Well, first of all, I think you have to make a choice of how much time do you want to invest in people who will never get it. Mm. And you can make the case. Here's why we're doing it. And again, when I introduce people, this is part of our Get to Know Your Neighbor series. We're inviting people from around the businesses. And what really helped, going back a step, was when we did the mixer, the wine and cheese mixer, we had the members of the session, members of the church came, and a lot of the folks who were doing the Minute for Mission, they were there, they got to meet them. And it's like prepping the battlefield. I hate to use that term in the church, but it's prepping, preparing, plowing the ground, if you will, making it softer for people to understand what's happening. It's that communication piece. If it's just out of the blue and no one knows what's happening or why it's happening, I think you create your own problems. But I think if you lay the groundwork, you follow through. And there might be some people saying, you know, I don't quite get it. You say, well, I understand that. I hope you understand why we're doing it. Reach out to the community. And there's some people you will never please. There was a bank years ago that actually fired its customers because they were taking up too much time complaining about things. And they did. You know, I said, listen, we know you're a customer, but you're really taking up too much of our time administratively. So we don't need your accounts anymore. I don't want to do that as a church. Right. But you reach a point where you can spend 80% of your time with 20% of the people just not happy, never will be happy, you know, and so you make a choice. You make a choice. And yeah, those choices can be tough sometimes.
Yeah. No, that's great.
But again, that's the leadership piece. I mean, you have to have some thick skin here. My skin's not always that thick, but you have to have some thick skin. Believe in what you're doing. Believe you've done the best to communicate it. And say, I'm really sorry, but here's where the church has decided to go under my leadership.
Right. No, I think that's helpful.
Douglas. So there was
go for it.
There was a cartoon in I think Christianity Today years. This goes back 30 years. So there's this bulletin board, and the flyer on the bulletin board says pastor's retreat October 16th and 17th. And the one person says to the other, that's the problem. Too many pastors are retreating. And I believe that.
that's my story. That's my joke. I like it. As you've done this work, I have to imagine, and you talked about this earlier, that if you're going to try things, some things aren't going to work, right? Oh. And to use a baseball analogy, you get paid millions of dollars if you can hit 300, which is 3 out of 10, right? You know, yeah. you're getting a hit. So can you talk about some of the missteps that have taken place as you've tried things and what you've learned from those and sort of how you deal with them? Because I think you're right. Oftentimes we're afraid to do things because we're afraid of failure. We don't think about it in terms of what I just did in baseball, that if I hit 300, you know, I'm doing a great job. We think we've got to hit it right every single time. How have you dealt with those missteps, and how do you sort of help people?
I think one thing is we go to a congregation and we may have in our own mind, here's what they need. I'm going to tell them what they need. I'm going to tell them how the Bible should be understood. I'm going to tell them what the issues are of the day, while forgetting the fact that the folks in that congregation have been there for 20, 30, 40 years, and they have listened to clergy just like me showing up. And they probably may know some of the biblical stories and its application better than I do. So I think there's a need to listen. I think there's a need to learn the culture, learn the place that is there, learn the people, understand them, and listen. And that's why it's so important to pick up a phone and call people and say, hey, I'm Ed Brandt. I'm your new pastor. Great to be here. I'd love to see you. I'd love to stop by. I'd love to chat, something like that. When you don't do that, I think you make a tremendous mistake. The second thing is making sure if you have ideas, don't just go off on your own and implement them without running them by somebody. You know, there's a governing body of the church, and we call it the session, the Presbyterian Church, maybe a board of Baptist church or whatever. But that may be the elected board, but you need to identify the people who really, really run the place. they're not always elected. It might be, you know, so it was like, I had an idea one time at a church in Pennsylvania. They said, well, you need to go see Mrs. Lincoln. Well, I said, well, she's on elder. Well, you might want to go see Mrs. Lincoln. And I did. And I got an earful about some concerns she had, but once you listen, you built the trust. It's building trust with people. And I know sometimes we want to be prophetic and we want to be that voice up there like a Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And you can't do that unless you have the trust of the congregation that you're serving and leading. And that trust is built over something as simple as being there when someone's dying, being there when someone's in the hospital, being there for a wedding, knowing that you as a pastor have their interest at heart. And this isn't just a meal ticket for you. This is something you are called to do, that you're committed to, and you're going to give every fiber of your being to carry it through. That's the kind of trust that allows. Once you have trust, you can almost do anything you want to, but you got to build, you got to earn the trust.
And I think you're absolutely right. And when you earn that trust, people are willing to go with you. Mm-hmm. And I've thought about this before, but I don't know that I've ever asked it. But what happens when you make a mistake and you break the trust? How do you gain that trust back? Or are you really sort of at that point? And
it all depends. It all depends what the mistake is. Yeah. You know, if you're talking about financial malfeasance, sexual malfeasance,
right?
It's going to be, you ain't coming back.
Right. Yeah.
And for those who try to hold on because of the stature, the status, the paycheck, that, you know, some of these places pay very well, depending on where you go. You're doing more damage to the long-term damage to the congregation. And we have to remember this too, that the way we act, the way we behave, the decisions we make, the words we use, how we interact with people, it's not just you. You are representing a group of people who profess to be called by God to serve the people of God in a faithful way. And when you screw that up, it's not just you, it is everybody. And it's a mar, it's a scar on that group of people who are trying to do faithful work. And I think when we try to do self-preservation, it does more damage than good sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good insight.
There's a book by, this is an old book, goes back 30 years. Jackson Carroll wrote a book called As One with Authority. You may be familiar with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, where do you get your sense of authority? Is it the sheepskins on the wall? Is it the titles? Or is it the fact that you have earned that authority? And I think you need to earn that trust with people.
You just set me up for my next question. I appreciate it. So,
Here to make it happen.
I wonder, and you know, this may be an unfair question in some ways, but when you walk into these congregations, there's no denying, even though you're very generous and you say, call you Ed, but people still know your background, and there's a certain respect that is paid for the service that you have rendered that someone who's 27 walking out of seminary doesn't necessarily have that same sort of pedigree that you have. So can that person do some of the things you've talked about today without that pedigree that you have or you bring with you when you walk into a congregation?
Absolutely. And here's why I say that, because I think people, you know, the pedigree is something that grows over time. People build reputations by what they do, not because of their last name or where they're from or the socioeconomic status. And we make a mistake by ascribing certain values to people because of their socioeconomic status when they may have no talent at all. And I think as I was that 27-year-old kid who entered a church out of seminary. And I, again, like I said, my background, extrovert, I made the phone calls. I connected with people. I did the house calls. And those home calls may not be popular in 2021 like they were in 1985, 1986, 1987. But the fact that you're reaching out to people and that you're connecting to people makes a big, big difference. And so I would say to any 27-year-old, 26-year-old going out, leaving seminary, entering into a congregation, is to jump into that big pond of water, get soaking wet, and don't be afraid. There's a life vest there. And people want to see you succeed. The majority of people in most congregations want to see the church become full of vitality. You know, they want to see that happen. And chances are most people don't want to speak against those who are the naysayers half the time. You know, I've always had naysayers. You know, I look at it this way. I've lasted longer than Jesus did. He lived 3 years. I'm going to 30. So that's probably unfair comment, but anyways.
I understand what you're saying. Well, Ed, I really enjoyed this, but as we get ready to bring it to a close, you've mentioned leadership a few times as we've been talking. I'm wondering if there are some thoughts and insights you may have of what we can do at the seminary level, or even once someone gets out of seminary, to better help pastors to sort of build those leadership characteristics that you may have learned in the National Guard or in other places that would be helpful for us in our preparation?
Thank you, Douglas. There's a couple things. Number one, do not try to do things by yourself. Find a mentor, a trusted advisor that you can confide in, that you can bounce ideas off of and get some solid advice, who has your best interest at heart. That's number one. Number two, read these leadership stuff that's out there. Read business manuals about how people make decisions, how they make priorities, how they care for people. There was a big thing years ago called management by walking around. I call it ministry by walking around. You walk around, you meet people, you sit down with people. It takes 2 minutes. I'm a big believer in a 2-minute phone call with folks to find out how they're doing. It's touching base. They don't have a long conversation. You don't want to have a long conversation, but they want to know that you care for them. It takes 2 minutes to do that. The third thing is, don't be afraid to make decisions that you believe are right, and suffer the consequences. It's a growing opportunity. When we make mistakes, it's not failure. It's growing. I gave an award to a young woman over in Amsterdam who was injured in the Afghanistan war. This happened a couple of weeks ago. Her leg was blown off with an IED. And so she started this foundation to care for wounded soldiers over in the Dutch army. And she says, do not be defined by how you get down. Be defined by how you get back up. And I think that is so true for all of us to remember. Do not be defined by your failures. Be defined by how you recover from your failures. That to me is crucial.
Well, I appreciate it. And I really appreciate it. You talked about the walk around sort of style of management. Yeah. My team will say that that's my style. Every morning I walk around.
That's a great style. That is a wonderful style. Yes. You can't beat that. If you come to work and just go to your office and shut the door. What are you accomplishing? It makes no sense.
So that's interesting.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate the questions, Douglas. Appreciate the conversation. Been good.
Well, I've enjoyed it immensely. This has been great, and appreciate your taking the time. And it's great having you be a part of this.
Okay, sir. Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.